Golf Smarter number 648. And before we begin today's episode, I have an announcement that I'm so excited about that I don't want to wait until the end of the show. Starting next episode, I'll be giving away a different prize every week until the end of 2018. So you need to register starting today. So go to golfsmarter.com/giveaway or click on the Enter Here banner at the top of the golfsmarter.com page to register for our weekly random drawing. Anyone of any age is eligible to win, and just because you win once doesn't mean you can't win again. Entries submitted before Sunday night at midnight Pacific or 3 a.m. Eastern Time are eligible for that week's drawing. One entry per email address per week, and submit a new entry each week to increase your chances of winning. There's a different prize given away each week, and prizes include free online instruction from our favorite Golf Smarter instructors like Josh Zander, Martin Chuck, Jamie Zimron, Jim Waldron, and Roger Gunn. We also are going to be giving away books and DVDs, gloves, shoe tips, and our grand prizes include a brand new custom fit high heat 257 plus fairway medal from Knuth Golf and a brand new Seymour putter like the one Zach Johnson uses. All the rules and restrictions. Are there any restrictions? No. Oh, yeah. No restrictions, but there are some caveats about shipping. But we have a lot of great prizes that are digital, so that doesn't matter. So anyway, all the rules are on our website, including which prize will be given away on which specific date. I'll talk more about it with each winner's announcement, but all you need to know now is go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Enter Here banner, or go directly to golfsmarter.com/giveaway to enter and win. The perfect putting grip and putting myths that will change your perspective. Part two with Pat O'Brien.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Pat.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, sure. It's been so long since we've talked last. So if you're just checking this about podcast episode out for the first time, this is part two of a conversation that Pat and I started where he gives, you know, he tells us his history and how he got started as a putting instructor and some of the tour players that you will definitely recognize their names, tour players that he's worked with over the years. And what I didn't ask you, though, we did get patobriengolf.com, and it's O'Brien as O-B-R-I-E-N, not A-N. What country club in Dallas are you working at?
I work at Lakewood Country Club, which is built in 1912. It is just a phenomenal place. Great golf course. We host, you know, we'll host a sectional U.S. Open every few years. We had the Texas Amateur last year. It's just a good old school golf course with some terrain and trees and great tent grass greens, which is kind of rare in Dallas, Texas when it's 105 out.
You made me nervous for a minute. I was afraid you were going to say it's a great old boy golf course. It's an old school golf course. It's like, yes. I can't imagine a guy from Northern California going, oh yeah, it's a great old boy golf school golf course.
No, definitely not.
No, I don't think you would do that. Okay. But Texas golf courses, for some reason, they're famous for the people that have passed through or played, you know, have been members in those courses. Have there been famous people that have been members of this course as well? I've got to believe.
Sure. Oh yeah. Yeah, well, you know, we've had our share of tour pros throughout the years. Byron Nelson won the 1944, I think it was the Victory Open out there, which is the precursor to the Byron Nelson. So the course itself has some history, and yeah, we've got some cool members. The thing I love about Lakewood is it's very low key. It's you could be famous, you could be a captain of industry, but everybody's just pretty cool out there, just
nice.
Very chill, and yeah, it's a great vibe.
Nice. How would you describe the greens at Lakewood?
They are slopey. They are bent grass, which they're very hard to maintain in, you know, it's 100 degrees outside and, mm-hmm. and humid. So our superintendent's been there for years. He's never lost one green. He does a phenomenal job. So in the, you know, in the summertime, they're going to be a little bit softer and a little bit slower, maybe running about a 9, sometimes a 10, which is pretty good. And then in the wintertime and the, you know, anytime other than summer, they're going to be fast and sharp and super fun to play on.
Do you have any influence on how they're maintained?
I don't. I mean, no, I'm just happy to be there, honestly. So
are they hard? You said slopey. Are they tough to read? Or are they pretty intuitive when you're looking at what the line is? It's like, oh yeah, that's definitely going to be breaking left to right.
There are some subtleties out there that some greens are just, yeah, they're competing slopes, just very tiny ones. They're a little bit tricky. Some are a little bit more evident. They're challenging, you know, they're even in the summertime when they're not super fast, you don't want to be above the hole. So that's really the golf course's defense. I think it's just under 6,800 yards from the tips. So it's not very long. But you have to drive it well, and then you have to be on the right side of the proper side of the hole coming in.
Do you feel your specialty is reading greens or getting the stroke?
My specialty as a player or as an instructor?
As an instructor.
Well, I think both. And I think sometimes people will come to me and say, you know, I don't read the greens very well. And it's really not the case. It's actually that they don't start the ball on the line that they want to, or that they think they're aiming. So they get bad feedback. So I think reading greens is an art, sure. And there are certain things that you can look for, but you have to be able to start the ball in line to get good feedback.
And why you like the Seymour putters is because of that setting, getting your line correct.
Alignment's such a huge component, yes, to the fundamentals. So Seymour is, it's going to put you in the same setup every time, same ball position. It's going to, you can't impose your will on a Seymour putter. And what I mean by that is, it's a straight shaft. There's a red dot underneath the shaft. There are two white lines that frame the shaft. So, if that shaft is dead vertical, not pushed forward or pushed back, then you have to get into a setup that to cover that red dot and to frame those white lines. And that setup's going to put you pretty square. You know, you can't cock your head to the right or left, which distorts your eye line. You can't move it up or back in your stance. So yes, it's going to get you into a proper, fundamentally sound setup.
Mm-hmm. On your website, you talk about a couple things that I'm fascinated. Let's start with the perfect putting grip.
Okay.
There is such a thing as the perfect, because there's so many grips that you watch guys on the tour right now. There's so many different ways to hold the putter to help
Absolutely.
People feel confident that they're getting the ball on the right line to start.
Right. So, yeah. So there is no it's a good marketing thing though.
Okay. To say that. how good, let us be the judge. How good a marketing thing is the perfect putting grip?
So you're right. There are so many different ways to grip a putter, and what really matters is that you're neutral to it. You let it swing the way it's weighted, and that can only happen through a lack of tension and also through, you know, really good form alignment, just good alignment with your body parts. And I understand that there are people out there who are, you know, left hand low or cross-handed or, and so your alignments are going to be a little bit different, but, the perfect putting grip to me is a grip in the fingers, not the palms. And, you know, I was all fired up about this when I first came out, and I still believe in it, but I've certainly seen, you know, I used to think that this is the way to grip it. You know, you're silly if you don't grip it this way. And as I've matured as an instructor, I realized that there are many ways to do it, you know. So long story short, back in the day, greens were grainy, slow Bermuda. And so everybody was taught to hold the putter in your palms or your lifelines. and that gave you the greatest chance to really, you know, use your wrists a lot and smack the ball because you had to. And
I looked at videos of, you know, of old tournaments and stuff, and I guess it's Palmer. He was very wristy in his putting, wasn't he?
Oh, everybody was, yeah. So that was agronomy. And, you know, you can look at any.
Really?
So get your eyes over the ball.
Oh, wow.
I think so. Get your eyes over the ball and grip it in your palms or lifelines. So then you're set up to make a very wristy pop-like stroke, which you had to do back then. And then.
Just because, you know, the grass was different, longer, bumpier, what?
Longer, grainier. You bet. Yeah. Hmm. You know, you look at old footage and these guys are hammering putts from 6 feet, 8 feet, and they're barely getting to the hole.
Yeah. So yeah.
They had to. And then 1981, there was a revolution, you know, Augusta National went to bent grass and that changed everything. And so more and more greens started going to bent grass and they got faster. And gosh, I vividly remember watching, you know, back then in the early 80s, like especially Tom Watson and Arnold Palmer struggle on faster greens, you know, because they used to bang the ball. And Watson was, you know, he's never short on a putt and he'd have 3-4 feet coming back. And then all of a sudden that turned into more and greens are faster and sharper. And those two just totally lost their confidence based on that, in my opinion. So that was the old principle, was grip it in your palms or lifelines. And a lot of people still do that today, and that's why the you know, the bigger grips are so prevalent now, because you can hold it in your palms or lifelines and still not have a lot of tension in your palms or forearms because they're related. So, but I think that why would you grip a putter any differently than you would grip a golf club? You know, you're going to grip it in your fingers with your heel pad slightly on top, unless you're Bryson DeChambeau. Which, you know, I mean, obviously works for him. It's great.
Yeah.
So there's no right or wrong. I just think that if you hold it in your fingers, you have more touch, you have more sensitivity, and your thumb pad is connected to your wrist joint. So if there's no pressure on your thumb pad, then the weight on the stick is going to hinge naturally and fall down naturally.
Wait, your thumb pad. Now I want to make sure that I get this right. The thumb pad is the part at the base of your thumb on your palm, or not the tip of your thumb?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So your thumb pad, there's a little wrist joint. There's a little hinge right there.
Yeah.
And so if you grip the putter in your palm, then your thumb pad is going to be connected to the grip, the putter shaft.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's any tension in that thumb pad, then that wrist joint, that joint's going to be restricted. So oftentimes what I see with people who grip it in their palms is they have too much tension. The putter doesn't swing up enough on the backswing, and then they're forced to, you know, hit it or chase it to get the bottom of the arc back to the ball. So my feeling was, well, if you grip it like a golf club, with your heel pad, which is the other pad on your base of your hand, then that thumb pad's totally free. And then the putter can swing, you know, freely on the way up and fall down on the way through. Quick story. I was in a practice round with Zach Johnson. This is probably in the late 2008 or so, 2009, at Riviera. And he was playing with Brad Faxon, who obviously has been a world-class putter forever. And so we're walking along and I said, Brad, can I watch you hit a couple putts? And it was the exact, my grip, basically, he gripped the putter exactly to the tee how I, you know, how I did and how I taught it too. And so I thought that was pretty cool validation, just all fingers, heel pad on top, other heel pad on a fingernail on the right hand. It was just perfect. So that was cool. And that kind of gave me even more confidence. And so I've taught that grip forever. But I also understand that not everybody wants to change their grip or, you know, can. It's to get it right. You know, if I'm not there, it's not the easiest thing to learn. Changing somebody's grip regardless is, kind of a pain for both the instructor and the student. So I came up with this sticker system. A friend of mine and I came up with it, and through a lot of trial and error, we just made these stickers that you can put on your putter, and it shows you where every finger goes, where your heel pad goes. There's an instruction card that comes with it. There's some videos that come with it. So if you really want to learn how to grip it in the fingers, this is the training aid that we came up with to help you with that.
And where does that sticker go? It goes on the putting grip?
On the putting grip, yes.
Does that work with the fat grips and normal grips and pistol grips? And
it works with everything. Yeah. If your hands are, let's say, average size and you have an oversized grip, it's probably not going to work because it's too much of a stretch to get it into your fingers. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to come down to a more conventional grip. And if you do grip it in your fingers, the lie angle on the putter will change. Mm. You know, if you grip in your palms, so take DeChambeau on a golf swing, he grips it in his palm. Well, what does he have to do for leverage? He's got to get that lie angle way up. He's got to ulnar deviate his wrist so much that it's in line with his forearm. And that's true with putting too. So a typical lie angle on a putter is, I think, standard now. There is no standard, but approximately 70 degrees. It used to be 71. Ping used to be 72. So that would get you in your palms, and then you could just raise your hands up a little bit, and that gives you some leverage so you don't break down. So if you grip it in your fingers, the lie angle needs to come down to about 68 degrees, and that's where you take all the tension out of it.
Mm-hmm. When I started playing golf, and I was told that you want a nice pendulum motion, and you want to keep the back of your left hand, your front hand, towards your target. And so it just kind of, to me, it just was the most comfortable and obvious way to do left hand low. So I started doing left hand low, and I did that for a long time. I've rarely been comfortable going right hand low with a putter. But then over time, it's gotten to a point where my hands are pretty much like palm to palm. I'm holding my hands together, and overlapping. But when I'm like lining up the putt and I'm standing over the ball and I'm looking at the line that I want to make sure that I'm on, I don't even hold the putter. It's just kind of like I tap it with my, like I'm playing a woodwind instrument. My fingers are just kind of rolling over it, so I make sure that my hands are nice and loose.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's kind of like just this, I'm gripping my hands like side by side.
Yeah. So you found a way to hold the putter with no tension, to control it enough, but not have any tension. So you can let it flow basically. And that's the whole key, no matter what grip you pick.
Hmm. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Pat, do you have any preference? Let me ask you this way. How do you feel about pistol grips and the fat grips versus just a standard putting grip?
Yeah, I don't. I don't have a preference. The end result, the end game is to putt well, to swing the putter the way it's designed with no tension. So if you can show me a grip that achieves that, great. But usually when people come to me and they're struggling, I'm certainly going to look at their grip and make sure that it's not negatively influencing that flow. And so, I'll fit people into bigger grips, and I'll fit people into pistol grips. And some people, I'll show them the finger grip and they'll love it. And some people want to stick with what they have. And, it doesn't matter to me. As long as you can control it with no tension, that's all that matters.
Now let's get into putting myths. What are putting myths and what are your favorites? Let's see what we can learn from this.
So, straight back, straight through, or an arc, which one? Some people are adamant that it's straight back, straight through. Some people are adamant that it's an arc. There's a famous teacher that advocates straight back, straight through. There are a couple actually, one's in Europe. And there's a famous teacher that advocates an arc. Well, I look at it a little bit differently. Well, first of all, golf's a side-on sport. So we stand to the side of the ball. If we were playing pool or you know, bowling or something like that, then maybe it's straight back, straight through, because that it's we're on the target line. But if we're on the side of the target line, straight back, straight through is a lot of maintenance. You know, it's just, and if the shaft was 90 degrees and not 70 degrees, then that would make sense a little bit more. So we stand on the side, the putter comes, the angle the shaft goes into the head is less than 90. So it's going to have to be an arc if it's going to be somewhat natural. But does that mean that you have to create an arc? No, you don't. You stand there pretty neutral. You let the putter swing the way it's weighted. The arc happens. You know, every swing has to have an equal amount of around and up and down. Otherwise, the bottom is going to be different. So if you, that's the beauty of putting. That's, you know, it's just set up to the way you should, reasonably athletically, pretty square, no tension, and all that stuff takes care of itself. So that would be one myth.
Well, so on that, I mean, I've, you know, we've heard over and over again that it's all about whether it's a full swing or a putting stroke, is that making sure that the ball, that the club face is lined up to your target at contact.
Right.
And so I, before getting the Seymour putter, I've always noticed that I was trying to go straight back, straight through, because I wanted to make sure that the face of the putter was square to the target the whole time. And what ended up happening, again, I noticed over time, is that it was creating a lot of tension in my hands. And so when I brought it back, it was almost shaking. Right, the putter,
right.
It's like I'm trying so hard to keep it straight. It's like, blah, 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 blah. And so I can't get a nice straight, I can't get a good rhythm doing it that way.
You're right. Yeah, I think the two dirtiest words in golf are try and keep, because they both indicate tension and effort.
Try, you know, so try and keep.
Uh-huh. Or make sure, you know, you said it. I wanted to make sure that I was right.
Oh, I see. Try and keep. Okay, good.
Yeah. I need to keep this, or I need to try to do that. No, you need to allow the motion to happen and let it swing the way it's weighted. And then you take opinion out of it. So, and that leads to another myth, which is keep the putter low, you know, keep it low going back. And that's essentially the genesis of the yips, because it's not designed to go back low. It's a weight on a stick. The balance point's down near the head. So it's designed to get out of the ground and flow up. And if it flows up, it falls down and the bottom's the same. But if you extend that radius and you keep it low going back, you're either going to drop kick it, or you're going to have to apply force to accelerate the putter to get it back to the ball so you don't drop kick it. And that creates tension and effort.
Whoa.
How about that one? Huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can see why it's a myth. It's like, wow, really? So by doing the arc motion that is supposedly a natural motion, because you're just pulling back and staying, I've definitely, with the rifle scope technology on the Seymour putter, I've definitely noticed that if I do an arc, I don't see the red dot that's in the rifle scope. But if I try to go straight back, straight through, all of a sudden it's exposing itself.
Sure. Yeah, and what a quick
it's
point
not
about
so that rifle scope is not just for setting up; it's for the whole stroke.
Well, if you're an engineer out there, maybe that you would want to look at that during the whole stroke, but I don't recommend it. I think it's more for setup. You know, so let's say in a good setup, your nose is right down the shaft, and that's where your eyes are square. So if you really had to check it during your stroke to make sure everything was cool, then on your backswing, you would have to get your nose down the shaft again to keep that relationship the same. Mm-hmm. If you just move your eyes, you're probably going to see that red dot. It's going to drive you nuts.
Okay. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
It so has been.
Forget about it. Yeah. No watching the stroke. No thinking about the stroke. Get into a good setup. Let it go. It's going to go where it should.
And just keep your eyes focused on the ball during your stroke.
Well, keep your eyes quiet. Let's say that.
Keep your eyes quiet. Oh, I've always thought about keeping my lower body quiet on a swing, but never thought about keeping my eyes quiet.
Yeah, you know, so they're not darting. They're not looking, you know, you're not focusing necessarily on a spot on the ball, because then your brain says, well, I need to hit that spot, and it becomes a hit and not a stroke. The target's the, you know, the entry point of the hole, or it's not the ball. So the ball's there, it's not moving. Your job is to keep your eyes quiet, which is an indication of you being pretty calm over the ball.
Mm-hmm. You know Eric Alpenfels?
I know of him, yes.
Yeah, he teaches over at Pinehurst, and he's written a book on putting. He's been on the show a couple times. I really like the guy. And he advocates, like Josh Zander, advocates looking at the cup when you're doing your practice strokes. So you're getting a better feel about your distance.
Absolutely.
You agree with that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's where you become an athlete. There, to me, a practice stroke looking down really doesn't do you much good.
Mm.
There's an exception to that. Tiger looks down, if you'll notice. And he'll look down, make his practice stroke, and then he'll make the practice stroke and then look up. And I think that's when he gets his picture. So, I mean, can you say that you have to look at your target while you're making a practice stroke? No, but for most people, that's the connection. Your eyes are telling your hands how far they need to move if you're engaged in the target. And it's a lot harder to do if you're looking down.
Okay, now you got me into a place where you may not want to go, so tell me to shut up if that's the case.
Okay.
Can we talk about your observations on different tour players and how they putt?
Sure, yeah, but with the understanding that I'm just like everybody else. I can only see what's on TV.
Yeah.
I haven't studied them up close, but yeah, sure.
Okay, I understand that, but still, you look at it with a much different eye than I do. I look at the ball rolling. You probably look at the whole stroke.
I look at everything that happens up until the stroke. The stroke's a confirmation. I look at how they walk into the ball. I look at their setup. I look at their routine. And then the stroke's the confirmation.
Okay. Let's start with Tiger.
Okay.
Let's start with the 2018 version of Tiger, and then we'll go back to the early 2000 Tiger and see if you see something hugely different.
Okay.
What do you see today?
Boy, I don't see much different, to be
really?
Honest. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I know he switched putters and everybody's freaking out about that. And sometimes you just need to look at something different. And I mean, that's probably somewhat normal. But what would be the reason for him switching putters? And I don't know. I mean, obviously the ball's not going in. His setup has always been one of the strong models for me. You know, he's in good posture. He's not stiff. He's athletic, but he's not slumped either. He's just athletic. His ball position's good. His eyes are very square. He doesn't have a lot of tension. So with Tiger, it's you know, maybe it's the expectations. Maybe it's literally the pressure that he's putting on himself to make that putt, to get back into contention, to win again, stuff like that. So it could be more of a mental thing than anything. I don't see much that's changed in the stroke, but you know, so if I'm expecting, I really want to win. I really want to get back. I really want to show everybody. Then is that going to manifest in my putting? It could. All I have to do is add a little bit of thumb pressure, and that's going to change how the stroke feels, or I add a little tension to my jaw, and that's going to restrict my chest. And so there are little subtle things that you can't see, but it's usually from something going on upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Phil Mickelson.
Yeah,
you know, because he's Mickelson, obviously short game, you know, God. He's spectacular, but sometimes his putting kind of works against him.
He's ranked number 2 right now in tour and strokes gained putting, which is unreal. Paul Azinger once said that Phil Mickelson will be the worst short putter in the Hall of Fame. That's not my quote. That's Azinger's
quote. No, I know,
quote.
But it's like, yep.
Yeah, and so there's a guy that has a lot of tilt to his shoulders, and the putter goes back low, and it stays pretty square to the line, not square to the arc. And so there's a lot of manipulation in there coming through. And, you know, he switched to a claw, and that seemed to keep the wolves at bay for now. But, you know, he certainly does a lot of stuff that I wouldn't teach. And, you know, I also wouldn't play him in ping pong because his hand-eye coordination is off the charts. So he can get away with that stuff. But yes, that's why he misses so many of those putts, is because it's all timing when you take it back straight and square to the line, not the arc.
One of the biggest hitters we've ever seen, Dustin Johnson, has become number one player because his whole game has just all gone up a huge notch.
Yeah, drives it great, has worked on his wedges. He's ranked 18th in strokes gained putting right now, which, you know, that's pretty darn good. Reason why he's number one in the world. My biggest thing with Dustin is sometimes, so again, the putter's a weight on a stick. So it would, you know, if you just swung it like a pendulum with no tension, that head's going to go first. It's going to outrace the butt of the club. So that would be the most natural motion. So sometimes DJ, through whatever reason, takes the putter back with the handle and the head together. And then it goes back a little bit shut and it goes back a little bit too low. And then he's going to have to manipulate it coming through, which is timing. So that would be the one, probably his Achilles heel when it comes to putting. It doesn't happen all the time. Again, that could be an indicator of tension, stress. You know, we saw it at Shinnecock. He didn't putt very well on the weekend, and it cost him the tournament.
It's interesting whenever you go to a teacher and they want to put you on the video, and then they want to compare your swing to tour player swing, going, let's see what they're doing now. I've never been a big fan of that. But it's interesting, just from the verbal description of what you're saying, I'm learning so much about what these guys are doing. It's like, oh, that makes total sense. Okay. So let's now throw out Jordan Spieth.
Jordan Spieth. So Jordan Spieth is... He's wired differently. He's edgy. He's very edgy. You can hear it in the chatter. You know, every shot there's some commentary, and you can kind of see how fidgety he is. And a striking example was last year at the Open Championship, where he was a wreck for the first 13 holes, basically. You know, hitting it all over the place and missing putt and just kind of, you know, fidgety all the time. And then, you know, he made that bogey save and then something clicked in him and he was off to the races. And when that guy gets confident, you've seen what he can do.
Sure.
So everything about him is unconventional. The way he holds a golf club, people talk about his left arm bent coming through, his putting stroke, left hand low. Sometimes he'll look at the hole. It's hard to pinpoint with him what's going on. Mechanically speaking, he is very cockeyed over the ball. So his head is cocked to the right. And so if you cock your head to the right, your eye line is going to shoot off to the right. And so it's going to make it a little bit more challenging to aim or have a good sense of where you're aiming too. Because if your head's cocked to the right and your eye line's to the right, then the putter, if it's square, is going to look shut to you.
Oh my gosh. I've always like watched friends or played with people and their heads tilted. And I was like, I don't think you're supposed to do that, but I never understood that that's because it changes the whole angle of where you're aiming.
Yeah. So, you know, when he came out guns blazing the first couple of years, he made everything. He was destined to be like the greatest 20 foot putter in the world, in the history of the game. He made everything from that distance. It's insane. Great at starting the ball in line, but then he gets inside 4 feet and you can see things change. You can see his grip get tighter. You can see him get a little bit more fidgety, and it's gotten worse certainly this year. I've always thought that it's because of eye line. And I think, you know, you get closer to the hole and then now the hole's in your field of vision a little bit more, and you know, you have a better sense of aiming, but if you're cockeyed, then wow, things aren't matching up a little bit. So maybe you get a little more tense. So you alleviate that by looking at the hole and it kind of frees you up a little bit more. So that would be what's going on fundamentally with him, but he certainly made it work through the years. And then what's going on mentally with him now, that's only a question that he could answer. You know, maybe he's putting more pressure on himself. The fascinating thing to me about Jordan is he's not a bomber. He's not short by any means, but he's not going to overpower a golf course. And you get guys like Dustin who can do that, and then who also has really elevated his short game, his wedges. Obviously, his putting statistically is better. Koepka, look at him. He's a bomber, but great wedges. Made so many putts down the stretch at the U.S. Open. Jason Day hits a good number one putter on tour statistically this year. So a lot of those bombers have really elevated their short games, and they've patched the holes in their games. And so maybe Jordan feels like he has to do everything perfectly to contend, and then that puts a different kind of pressure on him.
I'll throw you a softball. Zach Johnson.
So Zach, always been a great putter.
And how long have you been working with him?
Well, we started working together in 2000 and like late 2001, I think. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I showed him the Seymour putter and kind of I told him where he was aiming and said thanks and, you know, kind of went away. And then he called me, you know, months later and said, you know, that putter, I think I'm going to put it in play. I'm planning a Hooters event and I've been practicing with it for a while and I like it and I feel like my aim's better. And then he wins 3 Hooters Tour events in a row. And I mean, he's never looked back since then. And he's an interesting story from my perspective because he's all about fundamentals and routines and structure, and that's his personality. So he's got routines and fundamentals and games for everything in his golf, and putting certainly no exception. So, you know, got to the point, well, I haven't worked with Zach since 2012, I think the end of 2012. But essentially I don't need to, he doesn't need me anymore. He knows exactly what to do. He has the same routine, the same fundamentals. Everybody on his team knows exactly what he needs to do. So essentially he doesn't need me. And he, you know, he said, if, hey man, if I ever struggle, I'm coming back. And I said, great. And we're still friends, but he's never called.
Phone's not ringing.
No, you know, and you watch him putt and nothing's ever changed. He's never changed putters. That putter that I have, I gave him that putter, I think in 2009 that he uses now, he's never changed it. I think he changed it 1 week a few years ago in San Antonio, and I think he finished last in putting. And everybody sort of laughed at him, and you know, he's like, I'm an idiot, and I'll never change that again. I think he changed his grip earlier this year, putted terribly. I saw him at Colonial after that. I said, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know. I'm back. I'm an idiot. So awesome. Fundamentals to him give him confidence, and practicing with his routines and games give him confidence. And, you know, he's still a great putter to this day.
Mm. Who are you the most concerned about? Okay, here's a different way to ask it. Who would you love to get your hands on the tour today to say, I can really help your putting?
McIlroy.
Here's your chance for the invitation.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, Rory.
Well, first of all, I'm Irish. O'Brien, he's Irish. I really like from a distance, he is one of the most grounded superstars that I've ever seen. You know, the way he interviews, I've listened to him on podcasts. I just really respect him as a person and certainly as a player too. Phenomenal ball striker, and just a mediocre putter. And it's kind of like the, you know, the kid in class that has the answer and the teacher won't call on him. and Rory doesn't know who I am, and that's fine. And I'm not going to lose sleep over it, but I could help him, very easily, very quickly. And it was interesting when, he saw Brad Faxon before he, you know, won at Bay Hill. And Faxon told him essentially to quit thinking so much and just get into the picture and let it go. And that week was like the week that he let the putter swing and he let it release the way it's designed. And, you know, and then, but he falls back into the habit of not doing that, of getting the, you know, the putter to go down the line more and kind of hold it off and keep his left hand pointed more at the target. And that's not a pure release. That's a hit. And, you know, and it's, so that, that's what I would help him with. Mm. And, it would be a pretty easy fix. And I think he'd win a lot more tournaments that way, but you know, it is what it is. I hope he figures it out. Cause I think he's awesome.
And with Bubba Watson, everyone continues to talk about how he's self-taught.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to get your hands on him?
Bubba, Bubba's, you know, if I did, Bubba's got huge hands, you know, and he's got this little pencil grip and his hands just swallow that thing. And he looks to me like, you know, he chases it, like he almost makes the putter go through and down the line, and, you know, and he's, it works. And there's another guy that can ball strike it to death. And he's going to make enough putts during the weeks that he's in contention to, you know, to have a chance. So that, you know, I'd probably just get him a little bit bigger grip and take some of the tension out and take some of the chase out.
Interesting. All time in the history of golf, your all time favorite golfer and their putting abilities.
In the history of golf, my all time favorite golfer. I have to be Payne Stewart, because I had a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to watch him a lot, and I watched him change as a person too. You know, he became a lot more just tolerant and cool and at peace. And gosh, essentially through my relationship with him, I got a career path. He figured it out. He figured it out in life, and he figured it out with his putting stroke too. And he became a great putter in the last year of his life.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Well, you know, it's interesting because we've just spent two full episodes with you, well over an hour, and all we've really done is talk about putting, but you teach a whole lot more than just putting.
Yeah, I teach it all. I mean, I like to think of myself as a coach. My goal has been, I've been a pretty decent putting instructor for a while, and short game instructor, and you know, the full swing's a different animal. There's a lot more in play, certainly, with that, as far as how much the club travels, and you got vertical forces and path and face and, you know, and all that stuff. So it's a lot more complex. So I've always wanted to get to an elite level as a swing coach, as well. And so that I've been focusing on that a lot. I don't want to do that at a tour level though. I would rather stay in my lane, because there are so many smart instructors out there, ball striking wise, that, you know, I don't need to compete with that. I'm happy with a niche at that level to stick with, you know, being a putting guy. But yeah, that's been the fun is to learn. And there's certainly been a lot of influences on me, out there. Trackman's been one, and some of the guys that have come along, and we can talk about that another time too, but mm-hmm. There are three or four guys that have really opened my eyes to, you know, getting out of the 80s paradigms, basically, when it comes to,
it's okay. We like dogs on, we like dogs on the podcast. It's okay.
Okay. Yeah. So that's been a lot of my focus lately, is just to become a lot better at full swing and get rid of the old paradigms.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly you are a full service instructor, and we appreciate it. We have a segment on Golf Smarter. We call the Golf Smarter Academy, where listeners send in or call in to leave questions about their game. Would you mind if somebody called in and said, you know, I really want to hear what Pat has to say? Would you mind answering a question if they come in?
Man, I would love to.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Well, we encourage everybody to write in or call in to our Golf Smarter Academy. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. I just want to say again, patobriengolf.com. O'Brien is O-B-R-I-E-N. And I really appreciate your time, your insights, your tips. It's been incredibly helpful for me, so I'm hoping that also translates to our audience. Thanks so much for your time, buddy.
My pleasure, Fred. On the website, if I could throw a plug in, I did a series of videos on putting. I shot them up in Tennessee with Seymour, and they're not necessarily Seymour based. They're putting based and routine based and drills and games, and I'm really happy with them. So I would encourage people to check that out as well.
So, and are you also on YouTube? Or are they all based on YouTube?
I am on YouTube. Okay. Yes, so. Those aren't, but okay. Some older ones are. So you can certainly find some stuff that I've done before on YouTube, yes.
Okay, very cool. All right, man. Well, thanks. And I look forward to talking to you again. I would love to make sure that you become a regular on the show.
I would love it. Had a blast. Thanks, Fred. Thanks for all the good questions, too.
Well, instead of Golf Smarter Academy this week, I want to go back to Saturday and round three of this year's Open Championship. Did you notice how incredible Zach Johnson was putting? He was sinking 100-foot bombs like they were 18-inch gimmies. I mean, it was unbelievable. So many of the TV images of Zach lining up his putt had him looking down the line with his trusty Seymour putter in hand. So I was curious to get Jim Grundberg, CEO of Seymour Putter, back on the line to ask him just a simple question. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Jim.
Fred, great to hear from you again.
So did you get to watch Zach's performance on Saturday?
Yes.
I bet you did. And I'm just curious, as the CEO, as the daddy of Seymour Putters, what's it feel like to see your putter have such success?
You know, Fred, it was unbelievable. Saturday morning, third round at the Open Championship, we're watching. Zach Johnson heads into the weekend on the top of the leaderboard. The Seymour Nation is watching. Starts off with a little bit of a rough patch. And, you know, it looked like it just could be one of those days. And then all of a sudden, he drops a bomb for eagle. 100-foot putt. Followed by a 30 to 40-foot putt for birdie on the very next hole.
Yeah.
Putting him right back to the top of the leaderboard. So while it didn't end up holding on for the weekend, wow, was that fun while it lasted. We had so much excitement here. I personally had texts and emails from all over. Is this the greatest thing ever? Why would anyone ever use anything other than a Seymour putter? You know, that's why Zach never uses anything else. He does this all the time, and it was fun. We had then to see that putt just replayed over and over and over through social media on PGAtour.com, theopen.com, European Tour, you know, Golf Channel analyzing bombs from Zach Johnson over the years at the Open Championship. So it was a lot of fun. And you know, it's while winning is really, really fun. I mean, anything, you know, 100-foot putt for eagle at Carnoustie, it has to go down in history as one of the great bombs. And so we really enjoyed it. So kind of glad you asked, and fun to follow back up with your listeners.
Yeah, of course I had to ask. Well, Jim, thanks for offering a Seymour putter for our weekly giveaway so that we can get one in the hands of a Golf Smarter listener. Take it easy, man.
Thanks, Fred. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Oh, wow. Yes, we are going to be giving away a Seymour putter like the one Zach Johnson uses. And if you register this week, you'll be eligible when we announce that winner near the end of the year. Because once you register, you're in. But our first prize given out next week is going to be a good one for podcast listeners. Since episode number one of Golf Smarter was with Dr. Joe Parent, who was also on episode number 644 a few weeks back, Dr. Joe has graciously offered audiobooks of his three best-selling mental game books, Zen Golf, Zen Putting, and Golf, The Art of the Mental Game, 100 Classic Golf Tips. Again, to enter, go to golfsmarter.com/giveaway or click on the Enter Here banner at the top of the page at golfsmarter.com. And you could hear your name next week as our first winner. And if you have any questions or issues with your game, then send me an email or call our toll-free line at 415-761-1498 and leave your question to be answered by one of our teachers on our Golf Smarter Academy. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, use @GolfSmarter on Twitter or Instagram, or write to me directly by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. Good luck.